This episode is sponsored by Fry's Family Foods to celebrate the launch of their new Tea Time Saviour, the totally delicious and 100% vegan Stars and Moons.
The breaded shapes are a great source of fibre and protein, ideal if you want more meat-free meals for the kids.
They cook from the freezer in just 10 minutes, which means I already love them. A fuss-free kids' tea time that you know they'll polish off? Yes, please.
Now, on with the show.
You're listening to Sweat, Snot and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
On this week's show...
When I got pregnant, I did kind of surrender a bit. You know, I was like, okay, this, it's not just about me anymore. It was quite uncomfortable. I did feel like I had been kind of inhabited by an alien... I suppose I realised that a lot of my identity as well is in how I dress and how I express myself and how I kind of, you know, what I wear. And suddenly a lot of that was taken away from me because my particular style didn't really work with a bump, and I had to change a lot of that.
Welcome to another episode of Sweat, Snot and Tears. I have big news. We got a puppy yesterday. All sounds fun, doesn't it? But Simon was up three times with him in the night, and we're now having desperate conversations about sleep training and naps. It's feeling very reminiscent of the baby years. Wendy, send help, please. You've got to help me. Like, I know you're further down the road with Hector than I am with Murphy, and this is pretty bloody terrible, actually.
Well, you've made the first big mistake. You went in. You've got to start with the tough love straight from the beginning with puppies.
You can't when he's crying in the night. You wouldn't do that to a Bam Bam baby, would you?
You are making a rod for your own back.
My back is full of rods. That is how my back came.
Well, the thing is, with puppies, you've just got to grow a pair. I'm sorry, it's not like a baby. Just keep remembering it is a dog.
No, but he's tiny and he misses his mum.
Introduce the guest, I can't help you.
All right, well, she's got a real life baby, so actually this is a far more important conversation to be having. Welcome, Angela Scanlon, and congratulations on the baby.
Thank you. I was also up in solidarity with you.
How is the sleep? Is she sleeping? Does she sleep? What happens?
Do you know what? Depends on the night, doesn't it? And I'm kind of trying just to not overanalyze it. I mean, to be honest, with my first little one, the anxiety of the potential that I might lack sleep. Like, I was thinking about the lack of sleep before it even happened. I was quite a princess.
Oh, yeah, the whole day before the night is just spent worrying and planning to sleep.
Totally. So now I am, I'm just like leaning into the madness. But she's all right. She went down at like what time? She's 12 weeks. Went down around the like 8 o'clock mark. Was a bit overtired, bless her. And then I got her up and gave her a little dreamy feed, which I don't do often because usually I try to go to bed like a nana at 9 p.m. latest.
Guys, I still do it now. And my eldest is 10. It's the only way to live, I'm telling you.
I agree. I completely agree. And I'm unashamed about my need for multiple hours in a row sleep. So anyway, I gave her a little dreamy feed. And to be honest, I don't know if that worked for me because usually she's quite a quiet sleeper, unlike my eldest, who was a little truffle pig and you could hear her.
Oh, it's like having a hedgehog in the bedroom.
Yeah, that was such a surprise to me.
I moved both of my babies into another room at 6 weeks because it was like sleeping with a cross between a drunk man and a hedgehog.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they puke on you too. But she was kind of trufflier last night. And I thought, well, maybe because I fed her, I don't know. Anyway, she woke at around 2:30, I think, and then at 5:30, and then at 6:30.
Dream feeds never worked for me because they just woke up and then were like, oh, hi, should we play?
Yeah, it's a real mixed bag. I did try it before, but I pumped a lot on my first and I was trying it with the bottle and I'd put it in and she'd be like, spitting it out, whereas this is kind of, you know, it's slightly more difficult to do a dream feed if they're, you know, falling asleep on your tit.
Lots of things are more difficult if someone's falling asleep on your tit, in truth.
Put plainly, yes.
True. true story.
How is Ruby getting to grips with having a sister?
She is, she's getting to grips, literally. Depends, like, it's really mixed. She's starting to now, Marnie's starting to smile and she's starting to, like, she lights up when Ruby's around, you know, once the initial fear crosses her face. But she... And that's kind of changed the game really for Rubes, because up until now, I think she was just like, oh my God, my mom is so dry. Every time I go near this little thing, she's like, no, mind. So I think, she's starting to get a bit back from the baby and therefore is less resentful.
But they like to show their love physically, don't they?
Very physically.
I want to do this to the baby. And the baby has no... It's a bit like Annie with darling puppy Murphy that her little girl's trying to swaddle.
Oh my God.
Yeah, she's determined that he will be swaddled and pushed around in a pram. And he doesn't want any of that.
Oh, well, I see lots of dogs. We live near Highgate Woods and there's a lot of... there's quite a few dogs in prams, which always strikes me as... like quite mental, but you know, whatever you're into. We had a cat once called Marmalade. It was that color. And we did similar thing to your daughter. We would have like plant pots. I mean, maybe this is not similar, but we made like a little clothesline and we thought that we were putting it in, you know, what would you call that? A zip line kind of. So the little kitten was in the pot.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really sorry if any of you can hear that slightly.
What was that noise?
Truffle pigs underneath your desk.
No, my cleaners are here and they're in the bathroom upstairs, which has got like a mosaic tiled floor.
What?
Hoovering, I hope. But it's only a very, very small bathroom, so they'll be done in a minute. They're lovely, but they're Hungarian and they only know hello, goodbye and coffee.
Okay.
So they walk in and say, hello, coffee. And then we do some sort of Google Translate business where I try and tell them that I'm recording a podcast and could they kindly hoover downstairs first?
Oh, yeah.
Not thinking.
I have a cleaner who's the most timid, like wonderful woman. She listens to Buddhist meditations as she cleans. Ooh. And she's like this, you know, she's got this delicious aura.
Does she sprinkle Zen all around your house?
Kind of like you'd think by what she was consuming that she would sprinkle Zen, and sometimes I'll give her cacao and we'll have a lovely little moment, and then she'll go upstairs and honestly it is like she's really petite, it feels like the floor is going to collapse underneath her. She really really gets into it and you can hear it like that, you can hear the banging. I'm like, what is she doing? Are the glass doors going to come off the shower? She's committed.
Well, it's better than not being committed. Well, it could be worse. We had a cleaner when the kids were like your age, who I would put them down for a nap. She'd show up 2 minutes later. She'd appear with them in her arms saying, oh, I don't think they were ready to sleep.
Honestly, I would like, don't touch the baby.
It nearly drove me demented.
Right, Angela. Getting down to business, we've woken up to you being all over the papers this morning.
Oh, God. Oh, really?
Oh, shit. She doesn't know.
I don't know what's happened.
Excerpts from your memoir have revealed that you suffered with an eating disorder, and the world seems rather surprised. She's laughing.
I love just because if you could see her face, it's like, well, this morning this has happened. Oh God, yeah, what do you want me to say?
Everyone's like shock horror, like no one expects a capable woman to have had struggled with anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, hello, we're all human.
Yes. Yeah. And look, I mean, I think that's part of it was certainly part of my motivation to write the book because, you know, and I say this loosely, my brand, you know, is like positive and upbeat and colourful,
yeah, exactly.
And, you know, joyful. And actually, I think for me, there was always kind of a disconnect. And this was personally, but it was probably heightened because of the perception of me professionally. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, my belief, I suppose, is that joy, and the book is called Joy Rider. And so it's packaged in a very colourful cover. And I think it's maybe surprised some people that inside it's not all you know, unicorns and bubbles.
But with light, there comes shade. Do you know what I mean?
100%. And then I think you cannot access joy unless you've been, unless you've dug around in the stuff.
And you wouldn't be human if there weren't things that had bothered you or troubled you or, you know, like we all
absolutely
have our crosses to bear, right?
So what made you decide to stick it in the book?
I mean, honestly, I guess that light and shade. I think we can all appear very one-dimensional on Instagram and social media and kind of create this persona. And like when you're in the public eye, that again can be a kind of magnified version of that. And people see you as very, like a certain list of attributes rather than a full, whole, complex person. I've never spoken about it before. I have kind of on occasions really wanted to. I actually did speak about it, but it went under the radar, thankfully. I say thankfully, I think I probably wasn't ready, but I interviewed Caitlin Moran. I sat in on Saturday Morning Live with Richard Cole, and Caitlin was on, and she was talking about her book and her daughter's experience with an eating disorder, and we spoke about it off air, and then I kind of half went into it on air, but I could feel at the time like how activated I was talking about it. I was like, oh, I really need to like control, I suppose, how I speak about it and to be fully ready to talk about it, I guess. But honestly, I think when I was growing up, there was no point of reference, a person that I could relate to who spoke openly about it, who had come through it and who had a life that looked, you know, shiny and a relationship that seemed normal and things that were good. And so I kind of, you know, and I've spoken about this and I think it was included in the article that maybe you're referencing, is that there were two people, Karen Carpenter, who sadly died from complications with anorexia, and Jerry Halliwell, who, to my mind, certainly, you know, Spice Girls were gods to me. And I remember her autobiography, and it was clear that she was struggling. Anyone who kind of would have had insight into that would probably have guessed. But she wrote about it in her autobiography, and it was one of the instances that stuck out to me, and that was picked out of it, was her at George Michael's party, and she had gone through a bin and taken cake out, and it was kind of ridiculed. So it felt quite shameful for me. It felt like an embarrassing thing. It certainly wasn't something to be celebrated. I mean, not that you would celebrate it necessarily, but I think it felt like something that needed to be hidden and pushed down.
Kept under the covers, yeah. Not-
exactly. And the more I did that, the more I realised that that's the issue, not the issue itself. The eating disorder is not really the problem. The silencing of it and the suppressing of it and the hiding of it is actually much more harmful, you know, and does much more damage, really. So, I kind of wanted for the young version of me who was in that little hole and who felt very isolated and very lonely and very, you know, sure that I'd never have a different experience, kind of offer a little bit of hope.
But how does it feel now that it's out there? Do you feel a bit raw and exposed, or do you feel all right?
I feel raw as hell. Oh. I cried all of yesterday, and I totally was.
Oh.
I wasn't expecting it at all, because, you know, sometimes you do it, and it's similar with TV stuff. You work on it and then it's launched into the world, and it's only on that day that it really hits you, like that you're, you know, exposed, I suppose.
But why did it make you cry yesterday? What were the tears? Was it almost a relief, or was it what have I done? I can't put it back in the box now.
Both. Both. I got so many lovely messages from people saying thank you so much, and I really think this will help, and I feel seen, and it's not talked about enough, and all of those kind of things. But then I thought, oh my God, I can't put it back in the box, you know, and I don't want to. And I was very, you know, I don't know, sometimes I'm a bit reckless and I kind of throw things out there and I think everything will be fine, and I don't really think about the consequences of it. And actually, I think that is probably the right thing to do. And it felt very heart-led, I suppose, and like something I just had to. And if I was writing a book, and the book is about joy and it's about gratitude, and it is a very you know, there's a ton of tools and tips and methods that I've used. So it was just that kind of sense that there needed to be a truth in there, I think. And my feeling is that kind of joy, and certainly my journey, if you like, has been that it's been quite hard earned, you know, and I've kind of constantly been looking for that. I've gotten to lots of different places. My focus was very often on work and achievement and getting to those kind of next stage is the next thing on a list, and not really feeling anything at all, never mind joy. And so I had to kind of strip everything back, I think.
How did you get to the point where you had overcome it enough to feel like you were able to get to a point of joy? But also, how was pregnancy in the light of an eating disorder? Because pregnancy makes eating hard for lots of people anyway. It makes keeping stuff down hard for lots of people. And then your body changes phenomenally. Yeah.
This feels quite foreign. But you know what? I actually think a lot of the time my body did feel quite foreign, even when it was, you know, it didn't feel like, and look, I suppose so many people equate an eating disorder with body image, that it's a purely visual thing. And actually, I think it's, you know, it's an addiction really like any other. And so it's a place to escape. It's a place to, you know, to control, to kind of feel like you're in control of something. Or on the other hand, you're completely distracting and consumed by something that allows you to feel less overwhelmed by, you know, the bigness of life or feelings or decisions or whatever it might be. It's a coping mechanism, and you know, and obviously it comes down to your body image is a massive part of that. I don't think people have eating disorders in order to stay skinny, let's say. It's not that. It's a much more complex thing. And so,
like, alcoholics don't
just love vodka. Exactly. So I think, for me, my body was always kind of a complicated place for me to live. And so when I got pregnant, I did kind of surrender a bit, you know. I was like, okay, it's not just about me anymore. It was quite uncomfortable. I did feel like I had been kind of inhabited by an alien, I suppose I realized that a lot of my identity as well is in how I dress and how I express myself and how I kind of, you know, what I wear. And suddenly a lot of that was taken away from me because my particular style didn't really work with a bump. So I had to change a lot of that. But I did focus, or I tried at least to focus more on the kind of nutrition side of things. And truthfully, at that stage, and I speak about this in the book, unknowingly, I had kind of shifted my addiction, my food addiction, to a work addiction. So in theory, I was cured of all of those issues.
Did you ever get help?
I got help briefly when I was much younger, but it was kind of I was dialing it in. I had spoken to my parents and kind of in a state of desperation gone, I really need help. And there's a show called The Late Late Show, and there had been a therapist on. It's quite a mixed bag. It's a chat show, but they have all sorts on. And weirdly, you know, my parents kind of didn't really know, as most parents didn't, probably particularly then, didn't really know what to do with me. And then this psychologist was on, and there was a clinic that specialized in eating disorders, and my mum took me for a period there. But I wasn't, I mean, again, like any addiction, you know, you can dial it in, but if you're not really prepared and wanting to get help, then it doesn't really do very much.
Was becoming a mum then almost harder, though, giving up work then?
100%. So I had done the shift, and then everything, so all of my focus was on work, my distraction, my coping mechanism, everything was funneled into that.
And
so,
and this thing that you were good at and doing well at, and if you just keep feeding it, I'll keep feeling good, and then that's all fine, and that's all fine.
Yes. And also, you're rewarded massively for a work addiction, you know, socially, particularly if you're shiny and on the telly, you know, you're rewarded financially, you're doing really well, look at you, we can all see you.
And people say, look, you're great. I love you on that. You're so good.
Isn't Angela flying? Isn't her career doing well?
Exactly. Yeah. And that become like it does feed, it feeds the beast, so to speak. And then suddenly, yeah, and to your point, I was very, you know, very competent. I was very good at work. I always showed up to work. I was really good at achieving things. And then suddenly I became a mother.
Yeah. And an achievement is having a shower in the morning.
Totally. And I felt really overwhelmed. And also I didn't know what I was doing. And now I realize that that's quite a normal feeling, but it felt very unique to me.
I had exactly the same.
I completely lost who I was. Because who I was getting up and going to work and being a journalist. And then I had this little person and nobody told me how to do it. I didn't know what to do.
And I think if you're used to being good, I'm very competitive. I win. I'm good at things. And then suddenly I was like, I am really shit at this gig. You know, I did not know. And the kind of overwhelming sense of need really, really, and I wasn't aware of it at that point because I wasn't aware that I had any needs at that point. But suddenly waking up in the middle of the night, I had mastitis. I had a fever. I was like, please, can you go to the kitchen and get me something so I don't die? Like, you know, it was this kind of wild sense of dependency on my husband, on people around me. And then the dependency of a baby on you was like, oh dear God, I don't know what I'm doing.
And if you're so uptight, you often aren't the one that can solve. You feel like you can't solve your baby's problem. I've done all of the things they told me would work and nothing's worked. You're still crying. What?
Yes. Yeah. And I think for me, I was so like disconnected from myself that I couldn't really tune into her, you know? So it was like, it was exactly that, a list. I was kind of, you know, and I breastfed and it was really, really difficult. And she had a tongue tie and I had a nipple infection by the time I even left the hospital. But I was so determined to breastfeed because in my mind, that was like a physical thing that I could do that I knew was right, quote unquote, the right thing to do. And it was like,
God, you're me. I'm literally having slight palpitations because I did all of the same things. I'm like getting a bit like, oh God, I know.
And it's really, and it's in hindsight, I'm like, oh, that kind of cruel voice that we all, you know, many people will identify with, and you might not even hear it kind of whispering because it's so insidious, but it's kind of that sense of like you've nothing, you don't have anything really to give here, so you better give that boob, you better feed her, like the physical need I could fulfill. I just wasn't sure how to fulfill any of those other needs. And that was like, you know, in my own life as well as hers. But it was also the kind of turning point for me where I went, you know what? I might not at that point, you know, love or like myself enough to actually recognize there's a problem here and that I deserve to get help with. But I did think I do not want to pass this on to my daughter. And I thought, I went to therapy and I've been going ever since. It was kind of that, like, I was just like, I need to hand this over. And I had kind of, you know, been dabbling in and out and I tried meditation and I'd done lots of stuff up until that point. And then I thought, I really need to bring in the big guns. And that kind of sense of like surrendering into somebody who maybe was able to guide me a bit more really helped. And then it allowed me to kind of look at all of the other tools that I had dipped in and out of and actually really get something out of them, not just use them. Because they, up until that point, a lot of them were just, you know, it was a plaster, it was quite surface. But until I started really getting down and dirty and digging, it didn't really change.
And is that why you wrote the book? Is this journey what's led to Joyride, your book?
100%. Yeah. And it was that kind of that shift. I was like, oh my God, I was in that place where it was, you know, I had had those experiences where in work I had gotten to that point and gone, oh, is that it? And thought, shit, I don't think I'm ever going to be really happy. I thought that would make me feel full and, you know, content, and it didn't.
Who was it who said it's like climbing to get to the top of the mountain and getting to the top of a mountain and realizing there's nothing there?
I don't know, but I hear them. It's exactly that. And I mean, in a way, it's an absolute gift. And I feel really grateful that I had kind of achieved things that I thought were completely out of reach. So I was able to go, okay, no. It's not beyond. You've gotten the thing that was on your little list there. You've gotten it, and you still don't feel the things that you thought you'd feel. So it was a kind of, okay, something has got to change, because that list is not, the ticking off of that list is not doing it for you. And then I had my baby and I was like, I could see. And I know it's quite toxic in many ways, but that I could look around on Instagram and see all of these people having these beautiful, wholesome, intimate experiences of motherhood, fresh motherhood. And I was like, shit, this is supposed to be, you know, the most joyful, like complicated, no doubt, but the most joyful little experience of my life. And I'm completely numb to it, really. And that was, it was a massive, massive wake up call for me. And so that was really the kind of point where I started to, to shift and to invest, I suppose, not just cash, but actual time into discovering and trying to get to know myself. And I talk about this in the book a lot, that kind of sense of being really surprised. And I saw Ruby come up to this when she was a little bit older, go into the mirror and look at herself and be like, hey, girl. She was like properly looking at herself in such a beautifully kind of loving way. Oh, like only a child can. And I thought, oh my God, she is mad about herself. She really loves herself. And
that's all you want for your kids, right?
It's all you want. But it also acutely made me aware of how I did not love myself. Right. I didn't even know myself. And so I was like, okay, I really need to get back to that, or to attempt to kind of rediscover that little whole child part of me. And so, gratitude played a big part of that. That kind of practice, I hate the word consistency, hate it, habit, hate it, all of those boring, dull things that squares do. I was like, fuck it. I got into this job so that I didn't have to play by any of the rules. I could get up at whatever time I wanted. I could do whatever I wanted. And actually those habits and routines and practices,
the boring bits work.
Totally. And to access that kind of feeling, I was like, oh, wow. And I always resist it, because I can be quite high and then there are lows. So like when I'm up, I'm absolutely invincible. I can do anything. I pitch stuff. I kind of feel like limitless in terms of what I can do. I mean, often misjudged, but it's fine. The horse has bolted at that point. And then the payoff for that is the kind of, oh, you know, there's a bit of a come down, and I really resisted. I hated that. And now I'm like, you know what? The highs and the lows are all part of it. And actually, neither of those states. I think sometimes I thought what I was aiming for was like this constant high.
The media and Instagram tell us to aim for that. Sorry, Instagram labeling. It doesn't always tell us that, obviously, but the things that we consume make it feel like that's what we should all be aiming for, is this constant high, because you only see the high on there.
Completely. And it's such a lie, you know, and it actually does. It really, I think it's really dangerous, I suppose, because it's so subtle in a way. You know, I think historically, and there's always been that sense of comparison, you know, and I write about this in the book. Historically, that was, you know, the chick in the village who was good at procreating, or who had fabulous hair, or whatever it might be. And then, you know, now it's kind of, you wake up in the morning and you compare yourself to teenage philanthropists and billionaires, and kind of there are endless people that are literally living in your bed before you get out. And you think, fuck, what's the point in even getting up if you're comparing yourself to that level? And I think comparison is great. It can push you on. It can spur you to do things. It can, inspire. But that continuous habit of looking outward and comparing yourself and falling short and focusing on what you don't have, as opposed to coming back and going, look at what I do have. That's where gratitude comes in.
Now, back to Fry's Family Foods totally tasty stars and moons.
Now, I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for easy ways to feed my kids more plant-based meals.
And these fun breaded shapes are just the job. A source of protein and fibre, they make a brilliant swap for the usual chicken nuggets.
They're also Netmum's recommended, which, if I say so myself, is kind of a big deal. In a poll of 50 Netmum's members, 98% said they'd recommend Fries, Moons and Stars to friends and family. That's good enough for me.
Pick up a pack of Fries, Stars and Moons from Iceland or the Food Warehouse. Now, back to the guest.
Was gratitude the antidote to all of it for you?
100%. And I started, and the book's called Joyrider, and I talk about joyriding and this kind of idea of like, of shifting your state. And to me, that felt like a really empowered thing to do, that you're like, okay, if I wake up and I don't feel great, I have the capacity and the tools within me to kind of, you know, shift. And I remember being in a flat in London. I was in a really like not a great place mentally and financially and every other way. And I bought myself some really fabulous sheets. And I was like, okay, it's the first thing when I wake up in the morning, what do I do? How do I kind of create this state? Because otherwise you're kind of entering into the world hoping that somebody will allow you to feel good or bad, but you're kind of giving that power to somebody else and always hoping for external validation. People are too friggin' busy to give it to you anyway. But so I would wake in the morning and go, oh my God, the feeling of these sheets. And when you've come from like those like crusty, hard, cheap sheets, you're like, oh, babe, this is delicious. All about the sheets. And then I got like a little sheepskin mat. I put it on the floor. And so it was the first thing that my feet would touch. I'd get in the shower. I'd get like smell, like prop. I mean, ultimately it's presence, but it's kind of this idea of really feeling in and appreciating and like opening your wardrobe and going, how lucky am I to have these ridiculous clothes to put on me every day and to dress myself, to express myself. And then, you know, that's good. Okay. But like then somebody spills coffee on you in the coffee shop or you're in a traffic jam or the tube is out of whack or whatever it might be. It's flexing that muscle on a continuous basis. So when the shit hits the fan, you're able to move, you know, to move a gear really and to get back into that state and to know that you have the capacity within you to change how you feel.
It's kind of setting down an anchor for the day, isn't it? It's saying I'm going to anchor myself in a great place. And if waves come, well, fuck them.
Yes, exactly. And like, if waves come, fuck them. And also sometimes if they come, like you want it, like, it's not because I do think there's a lot to your point of that kind of toxic positivity. And it's like just paper over the cracks, you know, hashtag blessed and everything's fine. And and that's a really hollow feeling as well. And you can do it. But if you're not kind of.
Yeah, it doesn't feel real.
It's not real. And it's not human. And I think it's sometimes if the waves come, do like let them take you out and fall under the weight of them.
We all need a good cry now and again.
I love a good cry.
Wendy and I are big fans, aren't we, Wendell?
Our husbands less so. We used to meet in the toilet at Endeavour House on Shaftesbury Avenue in London for a scheduled sob. It was the thing.
But it was great. Got us through.
It's great. So tell us, I need to know now. I think I might know that the answer is that the baby's still asleep, but what are you grateful for right now?
That. I'm actually grateful for this chat because truthfully, I did have this book. Is this the right thing? This is week of publication. I don't know when this episode goes out, but I'm like the Monday, the book comes out on Thursday. And I've had this like wild vulnerability hangover. And I have this sense that.
It's a big thing you've done. It's a big, 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 big thing.
Honestly. But I was so like, oh, you know, maybe I was in a high when I handed it in. And then suddenly I'm like, oh, hang on. I'm not fixed, which is really key to know. That I do not purport to be fixed on any level. But I am kind of grateful for that honesty and the connection. And I think, you know, truthfully, I kind of made a deal with myself last year and, you know, and maybe it's my personality, but this, and maybe it's society, who knows. But that kind of sense of waiting until things are perfect, conditions are perfect to do the things. And
you end up doing nothing. Because the moment never comes.
You do nothing because you're never quite ready. And you look around and you think, how bloody dare she write a book? I didn't do it because I didn't have the balls to do it, or I wasn't ready enough, or whatever else. And you think, oh my God, what am I doing? And, you know, I say, like, my poor dad keeps getting quoted. I'm sure he's like, will you leave me out of it? But he used to say always, I'd go out tonight. If I was kind of on the fence about whether I'd go on the lash, he was like, you know what? You could be dead tomorrow. And I always thought it was such a grim and very Irish way.
Lovely nugget of Irish philosophy there.
A lovely nugget of Irish philosophy, but quite Zen monk as well. And so it kind of, that sense of, and I think maybe COVID and the pandemic and everything has kind of made us all aware of that at the same time, which is quite unusual. And you're like, actually, like, do the things, whatever it might be. You know, it's not going to be perfect. You are not fully formed. You can learn a bit more publicly. You can falter and you can make mistakes and you can fuck up. But actually, for me, always the motivation is to find some sort of connection with people. And I think that's whether, you know, the shows that I do on telly or my podcast, or this book, probably on a more personal level, is that kind of sense of connection. So even though I am absolutely crippled with a sense of anxiety at being like fully seen, I'm also, you know, hopeful and grateful that I have the ability to, you know, like vomit my words onto a page, and hopefully people can see themselves in there and get a little bit of hope. And I mean, look, the type A bit of me is like, this bed, I really hope this is a bestseller. And the other bit of me is like, if one person gets a bit of comfort from it, you know. So I'm trying to like go with the latter version, which feels like a healthier, more compassionate place.
So come on then, what's next? You've written the book, you've had another baby. What are you going to do now?
Do you know what? I am here for like a couple of weeks blitzing promo in the book, having the chat, and then I am going to take 2 months off. I was due to be filming.
Good woman. Where are you going to go?
I mean, I'm not going to go anywhere, which in itself feels like a luxury.
You're just going to live your life.
Yeah.
Oh, you're just going to chill with a baby and a little person.
I'm going to chill. Yeah. And Ruby goes to school in September.
Oh, you've got to do it now. Then you've got to soak up these moments, soak them up.
Yeah. Or else you're into the, I keep getting told you're into the half term. You're into the like all of that schedule. And I was due to be filming Your Home Made Perfect, Your Garden Made Perfect, June, July. And it was like, bam, bam. And I don't know, like shortage of wood, something to do with supply. Everything has been pushed out. Builders are a bloody nightmare. So yeah, I'm going to just try and really lean into that. I did. I mean, one of my other, the actual baby, the book baby, which was a little squarer to push out.
But I also launched
it's a little more, the tears were a little more severe. I launched a jewellery range late last year.
Jesus, what haven't you done?
I know,
what are
you, I'm an absolute
sucker.
Or
are you going to go up Everest or something before Christmas?
No, I'm doing nothing. No, I'm basically lying down. But it's called Freckle, and that I've been kind of, you know, I have to keep the wheels moving in that, but I can do that in a slightly more
gentle way.
Exactly. So yeah, but apart from that, I'm lying down. I'm a milk machine.
I'm glad you know your role in life.
Do you know what? That's what I'm surrendering into, because I struggled first time round with accepting the shift in roles.
Collapse into it. Just collapse into it.
I know. Yeah. And like there was a vomiting incident last night, and it was like, it's okay. It's okay. It doesn't last forever. It smells like fish. It doesn't last forever. I was like, where did the lentils come from? She hasn't had lentils on my watch today.
Don't. We had, I'll see your vomit and raise
Go
it.
On.
We had dog vomit
Shit.
The whole way back from picking up the puppy. And my eldest child is really squeamish. So every time the dog puked, he would scream and say, stop the car, I need to get out.
Poor baby. Yeah, so
that was a fun afternoon.
That was
guys.
Lovely.
A really fun afternoon.
I take both of your vomit stories and I raise you a reluctant pirate.
Oh, yes, you said to remind you to tell us about the pirate. Come on, I want the full pirate story.
So my youngest is six, Angela, and to their topic for the term is being a pirate.
Okay.
And they're going on a school trip and they get to go on a coach and they're going to do a real life treasure hunt and they were allowed to dress up as pirates.
Now, when did this happen?
This morning.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So in his infinite wisdom yesterday, my husband said, because of course we'd forgotten pirate costume, all of this stuff, get yourself a notice board, Angela, preschool, and stick it somewhere really obvious. And then every letter that comes home, you stick on the notice board so that you don't get yourself into shit like I do. I have a notice board. I still do it. But basically, pirate costume required. So yesterday at 4 o'clock, Tim was like, I know, she can wear my pirate costume.
Wait a sec. Why does he have a pirate costume?
That's a good question.
It's what he wore on his stag do. They made him wear it on his stag do on the day that he fell over in a swimming pool in Las Vegas and lost a tooth.
Oh my. How perfect for a pirate.
So she put this thing on and obviously it's really big. So, well, then we, a few safety pins and an old 80s belt of mine from a fancy dress that went round her twice. So she's dressed as a pirate. She then found some lace gloves that she chose to wear. So we were all sorted until about 8:23 this morning when she went, I look like an idiot. I don't want to wear it.
So what did you do?
And then I was like, well, shit, now what do I do? Well, God love Chloe. She came to the rescue in a way only big sisters can and was just like, you look amazing. Oh. You're going to be the best pirate there is. And so we got her up to school in the pirate costume, still very reluctant. And then praise be to the TA who had turned up and admittedly it, no, she was dressed as a pirate, but it was like a really raunchy pirate. Oh. You know, those ones that you can get in fancy dress shops that are all like. But God love her, sexy pirate aside, she scooped Gracie up under her arm and was like, look, we can be pirates together.
Oh, there we go.
And took her into school. So we got there in the end. But I'm never going to forget the TA in the sexy pirate.
Oh my, I know, also a bit appropriate for the six-year-olds, but fuck it, like lean in. But also I love, and I'm so heartened, like I'm one of four girls, I have three sisters, but my, the idea of like, Chloe, is that your eldest? Oh, being like, babe, because as a younger sibling, all you want is the like support of your older sister, especially. You're like, so for her to be like, you look amazing, kid, is the one.
And they don't often, that's not often the relationship. So for her to kind of realise that this morning, she had to pull it out of the bag and get Grace to school. And it was just,
yeah, high fives to Chloe today. Yeah. Right, last two questions, Angela. I'm going to flip them so Wendy gets the rubbish one and I get the nice one. What's for tea and who's cooking?
What's for tea? I did go. So yesterday we went to we called around to a friend's house. We'd been in Ireland for a week and they had a little party that we missed. And she said, nip around for some rainbow cake, which we did. I mean, it was around 6 o'clock on a Sunday evening. Everyone was getting ratty. It's the worst time in the world to call to anyone with small children. But when we were leaving, she'd had a big party. She gave me flowers, Michelle, thank you. Gave me flowers and two avocados into the pram. She's like, here you go. So we now have six avocados in a bowl downstairs and pretty much nothing else because by the time we went to the shops, everywhere is closed. So yeah. It's guac and there are always crisps in the thing. So, and who's cooking it? I'll do it. I'll send you some over. It might be a bit brown by the time it gets to you, but hey.
Right, Wend, last question.
Now, much more importantly, imagine that we are the baby and you have to sing us the lullaby that you sing and you can't just stick a boob in our face. That won't count. You've got to actually, you can hum it, but just sing us what you'd sing to her.
We've only just begun to live white lace. I mean, I know it's a wedding song, but for me, it's the most comforting. The Carpenters, weirdly. Other than that, it's Elsa, obviously. But like, you know, I'm not allowed to sing because my four-year-old's no singing.
Hey, Angela singing to me is going on my gratitude list for the day.
Actually, this whole conversation it's just been so lovely.
Oh, it was. Thank you so much for having me.
It has, and it's been very real and no bullshit, and that's how we like it, isn't it, Wend?
We tried to put that on the cover, but apparently the Americans don't like bullshit in a title, and I'm not a fan of BS, so...
No, yeah. No. So, best of luck with the book, Angela. I'm sure it'll be top of the bestsellers by tea time. And then you can go and lie down and enjoy your 2 months off.
And well done for being so bloody real about it all.
Thank you so much. And thanks for having me.
Anytime, my love. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.